Blog Talk Radio.
He saw the best in me when everyone else around me could only see the worst in me. I wish I had a witness tonight that he saw the best in me. I guess I'm the only one that got this testimony. When everyone else around me could only see the worst in me. Can I tell y'all one more time? I said he saw the best in me. When everyone else around me could only see the worst in me. I wish I had a witness tonight. All I need is one. Hey!
He saw the best in me.
When everyone else around me, yeah.
Everyone
can only see the worst in me. Does anybody have that testimony? When Trump walked you off, said you would never make it, what did he see?
He saw the best in me.
When everyone else around me, yeah.
When everyone else around me,
can only see the worst in me. Can I tell y'all one more thing? I just need to tell you one more thing. Listen to this. See, he's mine, and I am his. It doesn't matter what I feel. He only sees me for who I am. Does anybody know that tonight? Oh, see, he is mine, and I am. Said it doesn't matter what I did. See, he only sees me for who I am.
Help me sing it.
Yeah, girl.
And that
he is mine.
He's mine.
I'm his.
Said
it doesn't matter what I did.
Doesn't matter what
he only sees me for who
he
I am.
He only sees me for who I am.
Welcome, podcast family. This is a Hodge to Hodge podcast, and this is the Messenger Edition. We have co-producers Ken and Ron Hodge. This is Nurse Carmen. And again, welcome, 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 and thank you for tuning in. Next, we will have a conversation with the Messenger, Ron Hodge.
Good evening, and thank you all for tuning in. I've been asked on numerous occasions, when will I learn enough about relationships to be able to have them go smoothly? Is there a way to be happy in relationships? Must there be constant challenging? Well, you have nothing to learn about relationships. You only have to demonstrate what you already know. There is a way to be happy in relationships, that is to use relationships for their intended purpose, not the purpose you have designed. Relationships are constantly challenging, constantly calling you to create, express, and experience higher and higher aspects of yourself, grander and grander versions of yourself, ever more magnificent versions of yourself. Nowhere can you do this more immediately, impactfully, and immaculately than in relationships. In fact, without relationships, you cannot do it at all. It is only through your relationship with other people, places, and events that you can even exist as a knowable quantity, as an infinite something in the universe. Remember, absence everything else, you are not. You only are what you are relative to another thing that is not. That is how it is in the world of the relative, as opposed to the world of the absolute, where God resides. Once you clearly understand this, once you deeply grasp, then you intuitively bless each and every experience, all human encounters, and especially personal human relationships, for you see them as constructive in the highest sense. You see that they can be used, must be used, are being used, whether you want them to be or not, to construct who you really are. That construction can be a magnificent creation of your own conscious design, or a strictly happenstance configuration. You can choose to be a person who has results simply from what has happened, or from what you've chosen to be and do about what has happened. It is in the latter form that creation of self becomes conscious. It is in the second experience that self becomes realized. Bless, therefore, every relationship and hold each as special and formative of who you are and now choose to be. Now, your inquiry has to do with individual human relationships of the romantic sort. And I understand that. So let me address specifically and at length to human love relationships, these things which continue to give you such trouble. When humans love relationships fail, and relationships never truly fail, except in the strictly human sense that they did not produce what you wanted. They failed because they were entered into for the wrong reason. Wrong, of course, is a relative term, meaning something measured against that which is right, whatever that is. It would be more accurate in your language to say relationships failed change. Most often when they are entered into for reasons not wholly beneficial or conducive to their survival. Most people enter into relationships with an eye towards what they can get out of them, rather than to them. The purpose of a relationship is to decide what part of yourself you like to see show up, not what part of another you can capture and hold. There can be only one purpose for relationships and for all of life to be and to decide who you really are. Now, it is very romantic to say that you were nothing until that special other came along, but it is not true. Worse, it puts an incredible pressure on the other to be all sorts of things he or she is not. Not wanting to let you down, they try very hard to be and do these things until they cannot anymore. They can no longer compete of them. They can no longer fill the role to which they have been assigned. Resentment builds. Anger follows. Finally, in order to save themselves and the relationship, these special others begin to reclaim their real self, acting more in accordance with who they really are. It is about this time that you say they've really changed. It is very romantic to say that now that your special other has entered your life, you feel complete. Yet the purpose of relationship is not to have another who might complete you, but to have another with whom you might share your completeness. Here is the paradox of all human relationships. You have no need for a particular other in order for you to experience fully who you are, and without another, you are nothing. This is both the mystery and the wonder, the frustration and the joy of the human experience. It requires deep understanding and total willingness to live within this paradox in a way which makes sense. And very few people do. Most of us enter relationships forming years right with anticipation, full of sexual energy, a wide open heart, and a joyful, if eager, soul. Somewhere between 40 and 60, for most it is sooner rather than later, you've given up on this grandest dream, set aside your highest hopes, and settle for your lowest expectations, or nothing at all. The problem is so basic, so simple, and yet so tragically misunderstood. Your grandest dream, your highest idea, and your fondest hope has had to do with your beloved other rather than your beloved self. The test of your relationship has had to do with how well the other lives up to your idea and how well you saw yourself living up to his or hers. Yet, the only true test has to do with how well you live up to yours. Relationships are sacred because they provide life's grandest opportunities. Indeed, it's only opportunity to create and produce the experience of your highest conceptualization of self. Relationships fail when you see them as life's grandest opportunity to create and produce the experience of your highest conceptualization of another. Let each person in relationships worry about self, what self is being, doing, and having, what self is wanting, asking, giving, and what self is seeking, creating experience, and all relationships would magnificently serve their purpose and their participants. Let each person in relationships worry not about the other, but only about self. Now, this seems a strange teaching, for you have been told that in the highest form of relationship, One worries only about the other. Yet I tell you this, your focus upon the other, your obsession with the other, is what causes relationships to fail. What is the other doing? What is the other what is the other being? What is the other doing? What is the other having? What is the other saying, wanting, demanding? What is the other thinking, expecting, planning? The masters understand that it doesn't matter what the other is being, doing, having, saying, wanting, demanding. It doesn't matter what the other is thinking, expecting, planning. It only matters what you are being in relationship to that. The most loving person is the person who is self-centered. This is radical teaching. But not if you look at it carefully. If you cannot love yourself, you cannot love another. Many people make the mistake of seeking love of self through love of another. Of course, they don't realize they are doing it. It is not a conscious effort. It's what goes on in the mind, deep in the mind, and what you call the subconsciousness. They think, if I can just love others, they will love me. Then I will be lovable, and I can love me. The reverse of this is that so many people hate themselves because they feel there is not another who loves them. This is a sickness. It's when people are truly lovesick, because the truth is, other people do love them. And it doesn't matter, no matter how many people profess their love for them, it is not enough. First, they don't believe you, think you are trying to manipulate them, trying to get something. How could you love them for who they truly are? No, there must be some mistake. You want something. Now, what do you want? They sit around trying to figure out how anyone could actually love them, so they don't believe you and embark on a campaign to make you prove it. You have to prove that you love them. To do this, they may ask you to start altering your behavior. Second, if they finally come to a place where they can believe you love them, they begin at once to worry about how long they can keep your love. So in order to hold on to your love, they start altering their behavior. Thus, two people literally lose themselves in a relationship. They get into the relationship hoping to find themselves, and they lose themselves instead. This losing of the self in a relationship is what caused most of the bitterness in such coupling. Two people join together in a partnership, hoping that the whole will be greater than the sum of the parts, only to find that it is less. They feel less than when they were single. Less capable, less able, less exciting, less attractive, less joyful, or less. They've given up most of who they are in order to be and to stay in their relationships. Relationships were never meant to be this way. Yet, this is how they are experienced by more people than you can ever know. It is because people have lost touch with, if they ever were in touch with, the purpose of relationships. When you lose sight of each other as sacred souls on a sacred journey, then you cannot see the purpose, the reason behind all relationships. The soul has come to the body and the body to life for the purpose of evolution. You are evolving. You are becoming, and you are using your relationship with everything to decide what you are becoming. This is the job you came here to do. This is the joy of creating self, knowing self, of becoming consciously what you wish to be. It is what is meant by being self-conscious. You have brought yourself to the relative world so that you might have the tools with which to know and experience who you really are. Who you are is who you create yourself to be in relationships to all the rest of it. Your personal relationships are the most important element in this process. Your personal relationships are therefore holy ground. They have virtually nothing to do with the other, yet because they involve another, they have everything to do with the other. The divine dichotomy. This is the closed circle. It is not such a radical teaching to say, blessed are the self-centered, for they shall know God. It might be a bad goal in your life to know the highest part of yourself and to stay centered in that. Your first relationship, therefore, must be with yourself. You must first learn to honor and cherish and love yourself. You must first see yourself as worthy before you can see another as worthy. You must first see yourself as blessed before you can see another as blessed. You must first know yourself to be holy before you can acknowledge holiness in another. Of course, as most religions ask you to do, and acknowledge another as holy before you acknowledge yourself, you will one day resent it. If there is one thing none of you can tolerate, it is someone being holier than thou. Yet your religion forces you to call others holier than thou. And so you do it for a while, then you crucify them. You have crucified in one way or another all of God's teachers, not just one. And you did so not because they were holier than thou, but because you made them out to be. God's teachers have all come with the same message, not I am holier than thou, but you are as holy as I am. This is the message you have not been able to hear. This is the truth you have not been able to accept. And that is why you can never truly, purely fall in love with another. You have never truly, purely fallen in love with yourself. And so I tell you this, be now and forever centered upon yourself. Look to see what you are doing, being, and having in any given moment, not what's going on with another. It is not in the action of another, but in your reaction that your salvation will be found. Excuse me. I know better, but somehow this makes it sound as though we should not mind what others do to us in relationships. They can do anything, and so long as we hold our equilibrium, keep ourselves centered, and all that good stuff, nothing can touch us. But others do touch us. Their actions do sometimes hurt us. It is when the hurt comes into relationships that I don't know what to do. It's all very well to say, stand aside from it, cause it to mean nothing. But that's easier said than done. I do get hurt by words and actions of others in relationships. Well, the day will come when you will not. That will be the day on which you realize and actualize the true meaning of relationships, the true reason for them. It is because you have forgotten that you react the way you do. But all right. This is part of the process. It is part evolution. It is soul work you are up to in relationships. Yet, that is a grand understanding. I can't remember until you remember this. Remember then also how to use relationships as a tool in the creation of self. You must work at the level at which you are, the level of understanding, the level of willingness, the level of remembrance. And so there are things you can do when you react with pain and hurt to what another is being, saying, and doing. The first is to admit honestly to yourself and to know exactly how you are feeling. This many of you are afraid to do because you think it will make you look bad somewhere deep inside of you. You realize that it probably is ridiculous for you to feel that way. It probably is small of you. You are bigger than that, but you can't help it. You still feel that way. There is only one thing you can do. You must honor your feelings. For honoring your feelings means honoring yourself. And you must love your neighbor as you love yourself. How can you ever expect to understand and honor the feelings of another if you cannot honor the feelings within yourself? The first question in any interactive process with another is now, who am I and who do I want to be in relationship to that? Often, you do not remember who you are and do not know who you want to be until you try a few ways of being. This is why honoring your truest feeling is so important. If your first feeling is a negative feeling, simply having the feeling is frequently all that is needed to step away from it. It is when you have the anger, have the upset, have the disgust, have the rage, own the feeling of wanting to hurt back, that you can disown these first feelings as not who you want to be. The master is one who has learned through enough such experience to know in advance that her first choices are, she does not need to try out anything. She's worn these clothes before, and no, they don't fit. They are not hers. And since a master's life is devoted to the constant realization of self as one knows oneself to be, feelings will never be entertained. This is why masters are imperturbable in the face of what others might call calamity. A master blesses commandment. For the master knows that from seed to disaster and all experience come from the growth of self, and the master's second life is always growth. Second life purpose is always growth. For once one has fully self-realized, there is nothing left to do except to be more of that. It is at this stage that one moves from soul work to God's work. But this is what God is up to. I will assume for the purpose of this discussion that you are still up to soul work. You are still seeking to realize, make real, who you truly are. Life will give you bountiful opportunities to create that. Remember, life is not a process of discovery. Life is a process of creation. You can create who you are over and over again. And indeed you do, every day. As things now stand, you do not always come up with the same answer. However, given an identical outer experience, on day one, you may choose to be patient, loving, kind in the relationship to you. On day two, you may choose to be angry, ugly, and sad. The master is one who always comes up with the same answer, and that answer is always the highest choice. And this, the master is immensely predictable. Conversely, the student is completely unpredictable. One can tell how one is doing on the road to mastery by simply noticing how predictable one makes the highest choice in responding or reacting to any situation. Of course, this throws open the question, what choice is highest? This is a question around which have revolved the philosophies and theologies of man since the beginning of time. If the question truly engages you, you are already on your way to mastery, for it is still true that most people continue to be engaged by another question altogether. Not what is the highest choice, but what is the most profitable, or how can I lose the least? When life is lived from a standpoint of damage control or optimum advantage, the true benefit of life is forfeited. The opportunity is lost. The chance is missed. For a life lived trustfully is a life lived from fear. And that life speaks a lie about you. For you are not fear, you are love. Love that needs no protection. Love that cannot be lost. Yet, you will never know this in your experience if you continually answer the second question and not the first. For only a person who thinks there is something to gain or to lose asks the second question. And only a person who sees life in a different way, who sees self as a higher being, who understands that winning or losing is not the test, but only loving or failing to love. Only that person asks the first. He who asks the second question says, I am my body. She who asks the first say, I am my soul. Yet, let all of those who have ears to hear listen. For I tell you this, at the critical juncture in all human relationships, there is only one question. What would love do now? No other question is relevant. No other question is meaningful. No other question has any importance to the soul. Now, we come up with a very delicate point of interpretation. For the principle of loving sponsors' actions have been widely misunderstood. And it is this misunderstanding which led to the resentment and anger of life, which in turn have caused so many to stray from the past. Stray from the path. For centuries, people have been taught that love-sponsored action arises out of the choice to be, do, and have whatever produces the highest good for another. Yet I tell you this, the highest choice is that which produces the highest good for you. As with all profound spiritual truths, this statement opens itself to immediate interpretation. The mystery clears a bit the moment one decides that it is the highest good one could do for oneself, and when the absolute highest choice is made, the mystery dissolves. The circle completes itself. And the highest good for you become the highest good for another. It may take lifetimes to understand this, and even more lifetimes to implement, for the truth revolves around an even greater one. What you do for yourself, you do for another, and what you do for another, you do for yourself. This is because you and the other are one. And this is because this is not but you. All the masters have walked your planet, have taught this. Verily, verily, I say unto you, inasmuch as you have done unto one of the least of these, my brethren, You have done it unto me. Yet this has remained for most people merely a grand esoteric truth with little practical application. In fact, it is the most truth of all times. It is important in relationships to remember this truth, for without it, relationships will be very difficult. Now let's go back to the practical application of this wisdom and step away from the pure spiritual esoteric aspect of it now. So often, under the old understanding, people, well-meaning and well-intentioned and very, very religious, did what they thought would be best for the other person in their relationship. Sadly, all this produced in many cases, in most cases, was continued abuse by the other, continued mistreatment, continued dysfunction in the relationship. Ultimately, the person trying to do what is right by the other, to be quick to forgive, to show compassion, to continually look past certain problems and behavior, becomes resentful, angry, and mistrusting, even of God. For how can a just God demand such unenduring suffering, joylessness, and sacrifice, even in the name of love? The answer is, God does not. God asks only that you include yourself among those you love. God goes further. God suggests, recommends that you put yourself first. Now, I know this, I do this knowing full well that some of you will call this blaspheming and therefore not God's word, and that others will do what might be even worse, accept it as God's word and misinterpret or distort it to suit your own purpose, to justify ungodly acts. I tell you this, putting yourself first is the highest sense, never leads to an ungodly act. If therefore you have caught yourself in an ungodly act as a result of doing what is best for you, the confusion is not in having put yourself first, but rather in misunderstanding what is best for you. Of course, determining what is best for you will require you also determine what it is you are trying to do. This is an important step that many people ignore. What are you up to? What is your purpose in life? Without answering these questions, the matter of what is best in any given situation will remain a mystery. As a practical matter, again, leaving esoterics aside, if you look to what is best for you in these situations, you are being abused. At the very least, what you will do is stop the abuse. And that will be good for both you and the abusers. For even an abuser is abused when his abuse is allowed to continue. Now, I'm going to stop here on this lesson, and we will come back to it. I do want to finish up because there is a lot here for us, but it's helping us to better understand what it is that we should be looking for. We have a tendency, we've been taught a lot of things that are just, I got to say, just flat out wrong. And we've held that to be self-evident. But it's time for us, once again, to go within. We need to go within so that we can not go without. Now, it's a cute little saying, but you just don't know how powerful it is. You need to set aside your meditation time so that you can have that talk not only with God, but with yourself. Because if you think about it, God and yourself are what? One.
One.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. Thank you. So, amen. As we get ready to end this broadcast, I do truly thank each and every one that had the time to come in, listen. I just pray that something was said that will help you better determine just who and what you are. And I'm here to tell you that you are part of the body of God. So, if you don't go within, you will go without. So as we leave you, Brother Stevie, as he's telling us, have that talk with God. Hear the words that this brother is telling you. God has all kinds of avenues that he can speak to you. Some in music, some in this podcast, some in the newspaper. God can use any kind of vehicle to express something to you. You just have to be alert, awake, to see that God is talking to you. He said, I'll never leave you, nor will I forsake you. I love you all very much. I pray that the rest of your week is a blessed week, and we look forward to another episode on Sunday, 8 o'clock. God bless, stay strong, and know you are a part of the body of God. Good night.
Good night. Thank you.
Love too much, too bad. Just go talk to God again. When you feel your life.